It's the Tuesday Top 10. Who are the top first base prospects in minor league baseball? Let's talk about it.
You are Locked On MLB Prospects, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yes, welcome on in to Locked On MLB Prospects, your home for all things minor league baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby, freelance baseball writer and podcaster. Thank you for making this your first listen every single day. We're proudly part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. And today's episode is made possible by our friends at Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Doing something new today. We did this at some point in time last year, but it wasn't with any sort of rhyme or reason or pattern. We are looking at the top 10 first base prospects in minor league baseball. We'll do a different position group every week. This will take us all the way through the summer. It's going to be tons of fun. I'll even try to split up some of the outfielders as far as center fielders versus others. So to begin with, it's hard to figure out Kyle Manzardo of the Tampa Bay Rays versus Tyler Soderstrom of the Oakland Athletics for the number one first base prospect in baseball. I'm going to go with Kyle Manzardo. And as we talk about both these guys, it'll kind of explain why. But 2021 second rounder out of Washington State this year in AAA. So he's in AAA Durham. He's got 50 games, 261, 362, 494, 8 home runs, 24 extra base hits, 28 walks to 41 strikeouts, and 1-for-1 on stolen bases. Couple interesting things here. One, he hasn't hit a home run since May 13th. I think it's just a bad slump, but definitely interesting to notice that there. When you watch Kyle Manzardo, a couple things kind of stand out right away. Number one, I mean, and things stand out both good and bad. Let me preface that. Number one, he may be the slowest player in baseball. And I don't mean that to be rude. It's if we're evaluating these tools and we're giving scores, his run grade, you see it in a lot of different scouting reports across the prospect apparatus. He's like, it's a 20, it's a 25. I mean, he may be one of the slower players in Major League Baseball. I actually pulled up a video when I was finishing this script, pulled up a video to watch him with the one triple that he's hit this year. And I showed somebody and they just laughed, like not knowing who he was. He's running so hard, yet he's not going that fast. And he may be one of the slower players in baseball, but he has one of the just simplest, purest swings in all of minor league baseball. Lefty hitter, and we've talked on the show before about hitters are born and not made. Kyle Manzardo was born to hit balls. I would give the hit tool probably a 70 grade. He does very, very well at one, recognizing pitches in the zone. And then two, not missing at those pitches in the zone. He's not your prototypical massive masher that you see a lot of teams have at first base. It's something where his exit velos aren't like his average, his 90th percentile. Not anything that blow you away, but he's just very, very, he makes very good quality, solid contact whenever he swings. Can easily send balls to all fields, loves to pepper the gaps, can absolutely pull one and just crank a home run. Don't get me wrong, he has that power in him, but it's he has to spray it towards the gaps, because if he puts the ball on the ground in the infield, it's not going to be a hit. It's not going to be a hit at the minor league level. It's definitely not going to be a hit at the major league level. And so Kyle Manzardo is working with a little bit of limitation there. Despite that, the power is at least above average. I don't necessarily know if it's going to get to plus, but it's at least above average. And then defensively, not that, you know, that does matter for prospects, not for fantasy. Defensively, he does play first base perfectly fine, despite the range not being great because of the foot speed. I mean, he can get the throws off he has to make if he's trying to turn a double play to second. He can throw across the diamond. He can make all the throws he has to make. He can pick it. He can field the position if it's in his range. So perfectly fine there. One of the issues he has is he's kind of blocked. When you look at the major league level, Yandy Diaz finally figured out that launch angle issue that bedeviled him for years. You've got Luke Raley playing well at first base. There's a lot of guys between Kyle Manzardo and consistent playing time at the major league level, which feels like it kind of happens a lot with these Rays prospects, right? They'll spend a little more, little extra time marinating in the minors before they can finally get up because there's all these other options that could do stuff. But either way, love Kyle Manzardo, love what he does. I have him at number one over Tyler Soderstrom of the Oakland A's. The thing with Tyler Soderstrom is part of the reason I have him at number two is we still don't know for a fact if he's going to be a first baseman or a catcher. He splits his time. Last I checked, he had like 19 starts at first and 24 at catcher. He's one of only two guys on this list that does a lot of first base and catcher. So, but 2020 first rounder out of high school. He's in AAA with the Aviators right now, the Las Vegas Aviators. 46 games, 255, 304, 532, 12 home runs, 27 extra base hits, 13 walks, 256 strikeouts, has not attempted a stolen base. If he's going to be a first baseman, then offensively he's ready for the bigs. Now, you do have Ryan Noda at the first base at the major league level, who we've never talked about on the show. That's coming on Thursday. Every day, or stay tuned. We're finally doing that guys we've never talked about show. We're doing that show on Thursday. So Ryan Noda will be in there. And you've got guys like Seth Brown, but Oakland's not a great team, obviously. If you need, if he's ready, he would come up. And it feels like part of the reason he's still down there is he's also playing catcher. He's still catching quite a bit, and he's still a little bit raw when it comes to the catching. They've also played him a couple innings in right field. There's been discussion. I think the Baseball America write-up said they thought he could play some third base, maybe. I don't think he's actually done that in the minors yet. And so he's going to spend some more time learning the defense at first base, getting some exposure to those other positions, something where when he comes up, you've got Shea Langeliers, who is your everyday starter. You can have Soderstrom catch as his backup 2 days a week. You can let Soderstrom play first base. You've got options. And so they're kind of slow playing it. I do feel like he's probably higher power ceiling than Manzardo, but everybody below Manzardo is probably a lower hit tool. I still think Tyler Soderstrom is a plus hit tool. It's just nobody's in the realm of Manzardo. His average exit velo, this is for Soderstrom, is really good. Breaking 90. Really good contact ability, really good understanding of the strike zone, and ability to manipulate the barrel to contact anything in the zone when he recognizes it's going to be a strike. So very impressed with that. He is a little bit aggressive at times. You saw that. Usually as he gets to a new level, he'll struggle a little bit because he's aggressive and he has to kind of rein it in. You can use that against him a bit. So some stuff to watch. But Tyler Soderstrom absolutely could play in the majors in 2023 because the bat is good enough right now. And defensively, he can contribute at a couple different positions enough to be on the field just about every single day. In just a minute, we've got to have the debate about Matt Mervis versus Christian Encarnacion Strand. But first, today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Game Time. Buying tickets to your favorite events, sporting events, comedy shows, concerts, whatever it might be, should not be stressful. And that's what the Game Time app can do. You get killer deals on last minute tickets. They've got a best price guarantee. You don't have to stress about waiting through the queue to get into the lobby to make the purchase the day it comes out. You can rest comfortable knowing you'll have options the day of the event. They have exclusive flash deals on tickets for, football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, whatever it might be. And with the Game Time guarantee, you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. So snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off your first purchase. Again, create an account, redeem code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. In the Tuesday Top 10, we're looking at first base prospects in the minor leagues. And number one, number two, Kyle Manzardo, Tyler Soderstrom. For three and four, it's between Matt Mervis of the Chicago Cubs and Christian Encarnacion Strand of the Cincinnati Reds. And where I am with this, I'm trying to not let Matt Mervis's struggles in his first 20 games at the major league level color the way that I view his potential as a first baseman. I'm putting forth that effort. I still think I'm going to put Christian Encarnacion Strand third. And I wouldn't have done this when the season started. But Christian Encarnacion Strand came back from the back issue that he had, is destroying AAA to a level greater than what Matt Mervis did when he was in AAA. So for Christian Encarnacion Strand, 2021 fourth rounder out of Oklahoma State, was drafted by the Twins and was moved over to the Reds. And 36 games in AAA this year, 333, 391, 686, 14 home runs, 25 extra base hits, 13 walks to 41 strikeouts. You do have a little bit of concern about the whole 41 strikeouts in 36 games. That does make you worry a little bit. Some of that may have been a little bit of rust from not having a complete full spring training and all of that, but still, the power production is absurd. 686 slugging is ridiculous. Now, at Oklahoma State, he played both first base and third base, has a humongous arm, so it definitely gives him a little bit of extra versatility as far as he's not completely unfamiliar with third base. If something came up during a game, utility-wise, he could move over and play some third. Obviously, you have a ton of middle infield prospects in Cincinnati, so you don't need him to play third base on a regular basis. And this year, he's played almost entirely first, but you have the ability for him to do stuff. But we need to correctly label him as a first baseman. He is a little bit streaky. So offensively, when he gets out of his approach, he gets too aggressive. He tries to sometimes pull the ball a little too far. He has good opposite field power, but it's a matter of staying kind of under control. He's got like the bat control, the pitch recognition to do well, but again, a little bit streaky, and he can swing and miss out of the zone a bit if he pulls the trigger too early on a swing decision on a pitch that you are able to execute from in the zone to out of the zone. So there is going to be a little bit of interesting adjustment period as he gets to the major leagues and the book on him comes out and they say, okay, if you can execute a really good, let's say, a really good slider down and away, if you can execute that slider thrown from a righty to him, you're going to be able to get him out. But for the most part, I feel good about Christian Encarnacion Strand being able to hit wherever he goes because he's hit wherever he went. Back in college, he hit over 300, slugged over 500. If you go through, he's been at five different affiliates in his minor league career. Low A Fort Myers, High A Cedar Rapids, Double A Wichita with the Twins, and then Double A Chattanooga and now Triple A Louisville with the Reds. And every single one of them, no matter the sample, he finished with a batting average at or just below 300. His lowest was 296 in Cedar Rapids in 74 games in 22. And a slugging percentage over 500 at every single place. And a lot of them were very close, if not over 600. So he's done it everywhere he's gone. He's going to do it at the major league level. I feel like the power is probably 70 grade. The question is, does the hit tool, like the aggressiveness and the chase on well-executed breaking pitches, does that hold his ceiling down when he gets to the majors? I don't think it's going to, and that's why I've got him at number three. even though I do really love Matt Mervis, was a prospect of the pod for a while. And again, we're trying not to let Matt Mervis's struggles at the major league level color our impressions of him. So to kind of to illustrate what I'm talking about, 20 games at the major league level for Matt Mervis, 179, 257, 284, two home runs, three extra base hits, seven walks to 25 strikeouts. But this year in AAA Iowa, where he went back after finishing the year, he got like 2 months there to end last year, Matt Mervis went 286, 402, 560 this season in AAA, six home runs in 24 games, so one every four games, 13 extra base hits, broke that one every other game kind of milestone we look for, 18 walks to 19 strikeouts, walked a ton, didn't strike out, struck out less than once a game, walked almost as often as he did, had lots of extra base pop. And when you watch him now, the lefty swing is very good. He's gotten better at improving the swing, closing some of the holes he had, shortening the swing so he's quicker to the plate, and then getting better at filling in the gaps around what he hasn't been able to do that well. He's really good at pitches that are left in the middle third or something kind of inside. He's susceptible to stuff away. He's susceptible to breaking and off-speed stuff low. And he does struggle against lefties a bit. So I think you're going to... So he is going to have to be protected a little bit as far as facing lefties too often. Another guy like CES... massive arms, a 70 grade. He used to pitch, I think, a bit at Duke in college. And so, has the fantastic arm strength, but defensively as well. I think he's slower than CES. They're not, neither one of them is at least average speed. They're both below that. But the defense for both of them is like, they're fine at first. They're not going to win gold gloves, but they're fine. They're playable at first base. And they're going to have to hit. And Matt Mervis, I think, is going to run into times when he has a lower batting average than CES. He's going to run into times where he's not going to strike out nearly as much. So he's going to run a lower batting average, but he's also not going to strike out. He'll get more balls in play, but he's also going to be susceptible to, because he's pulling the ball a lot, he's going to be a little more susceptible. You can't shift, but you can position a little bit better. He's going to have a little bit more trouble with things like that. So ultimately, I've got Christian Encarnacion Strand at 3 and Matt Mervis at 4. In just a minute, we're going to get to a breakdown of our number 5 guy, probably somebody you weren't expecting, and then we'll give you the names of 6 through 10. But first, today's episode is sponsored by our friends at BetterHelp. If you have been feeling like you are being pulled in too many directions, that's typically a sign that you are not properly taking the time to think about what you need for yourself. Everybody has demands on their time. And we always forget that we can include ourselves in the demands for our time. It is perfectly okay to say, I can't do that. I have something else to do. And the something else being something that you need for you. If you've never talked to a professional therapist, it is a useful tool to understand how you go about approaching the demands on your time and how you handle the stress of getting through your day-to-day. It can be really illuminative. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you want to give it a try, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be very convenient, very flexible, very suited to your schedule. You fill out a brief questionnaire, and they'll get you matched with a licensed therapist. What I love about BetterHelp is that relationship with the therapist is very important. You have to feel comfortable with them, talking to them, chatting, whatever it might be, however you're getting your therapy from BetterHelp. And so if for some reason the vibes just aren't right with you and that therapist, you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lockedonMLB to get 10% off your first month. Again, BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, patreon.com/LockedOnMLB. Okay, number five on our Tuesday top 10 of the best first base prospects in minor league baseball is Tyler Locklear of the Seattle Mariners. A lot of people probably don't have him on their list because he's been listed as a third baseman, and he was drafted out of VCU the second round in 2022. He was drafted and announced as a third baseman, but he has played nothing but first base this year. So he gets drafted last year. He's in low A Modesto after rookie ball with the Nuts. 29 games, 282, 353, 504, 7 home runs, 12 extra base hits. You saw some strikeout concerns, 7 walks to 29 strikeouts in 29 games. He turns around this year, goes to high A Everett, and is absolutely destroying. In his 48 games in high A Everett, 311, 419, 572. There's your 345 slash line. 11 home runs, 25 total extra base hits, 27 walks to 48 strikeouts, 7 of 7 on stolen bases. The strikeout rate is the exact same despite going to a higher level of competition. The walk rate is better. So he goes from 7 walks in 29 games in Modesto to 27 walks in 48 games in Everett. So he almost doubles the walk rate if my really quick math while I'm talking is correct. Now, he's still not a completely finished product at first base. He's been playing a lot of third, things like that. The speed isn't necessarily great. The arm's only average, but he's playable at first base. And then the big thing is he has the power that you're looking for from that stereotypical first base slugger profile. He is, last I saw, he's listed at 6'3", 210, and it is a very... filled out and maxed 210. I would not be surprised if you told me that was actually a 225 or so. He was recruited to play college football as a tight end. Like, that's how big and just muscular he is. The swing, he's gotten better to make the swing more fluid. He had been, it's a righty swing. It had been a little bit stiff and a little bit long, but he's getting it better at getting it into the zone quicker. And when he makes contact, holy cow, it is, the raw power is probably 70 grade or higher. I think it's going to be at least plus raw power in games. I've seen him go opposite field and go over scoreboards. I've seen him go dead center and go over the batter's eye. It is absurd. The top end exit velos are nuts. Tyler Locklear has an absolute cannon for a bat. Now, the things he has to work on is, one, pitch selection. Part of the reason you wanted to get him from Modesto to high A was to a little bit better caliber of pitchers who could execute a game plan a little bit better. I think you would have seen him in double A pretty soon, if not for the second thing, which is he is currently out because of a broken hand. If I saw it right, he got hit on the hand or the wrist, I'm not quite sure which one, by a pitch. And so he is out right now rehabbing from that. So downside is Tyler Locklear is not playing right this moment. But the full-time move to first base has paid off. And once he's back healthy, I think if he was healthy, you would already see him getting moved to double A. But once he comes back healthy, it'll be a pretty quick progression, provided he's still hitting, to get him into double A, to get him into Arkansas a little bit later. Might work out well that he doesn't get into double A until after the midpoint of the season when they start that second half run. But either way, I really like Tyler Locklear's future as a power hitting, everyday first baseman on a contending team. I think he's fantastic, and I'm very excited to see what he's able to do. 6 through 10, we're not going to do full breakdowns on these. I'm already at like 25 minutes, and it's just not going to work out here, but we'll give you a list. Ivan Melendez of the Arizona Diamondbacks was the 2022 Dick Houser Award winner in college baseball for the best college player. In his 30 games in high A right now, 266, 367, 569, 8 home runs, 17 extra base hits, 11 walks to 44 strikeouts, 2-for-2 on stolen bases. He is playing a lot of third base this year. He's played more third base than first base, kind of like how Tyler Soderstrom has caught more than he played first base this year. So I'm not quite sure. I don't know if that's a positional versatility thing where it's easier to get him up to the big league level because you have Christian Walker there. You've got other guys who can play first. I'm not sure if it's that or if it's a legitimately we think he's going to stick at third base. But either way, just a quick note on that. But Ivan Melendez, we have him at number 6. Spencer Horwitz of the Toronto Blue Jays. He came up in yesterday's show in the third segment. The Everydayers have already heard about him this week. But 48 games in AAA Buffalo, 320, 440, 434, 2 home runs, 16 extra base hits, 36 walks to 42 strikeouts, and 3-for-4 on stolen bases. Not your prototypical massive slugger. The power is there, but he's really a spray line drives kind of guy, kind of in the mold of a Vinny Pascantino or a Nate Lowe or Lau, whichever one it is in Texas. I always get those three guys confused because two of them say it one way, one of them says it the other. Some of the other guys, Hunter Goodman of the Colorado Rockies, another catcher and first base flex guy. He's played both. I want to say this year he's played 11 games in AA Hartford at first. He's played 15 games in left. He's played 9 games as catcher, and he's DH'd some as well. So a couple different things there. But Hunter Goodman, again, those 49 games in AA Hartford, 241, 324, 572, 16 home runs, 30 total extra base hits, 23 walks to 53 strikeouts. I like the versatility. I like a lot of what he does. Question's going to be, where does he end up playing? Is he a guy first base, left field, multiple kind of things, like what they did with Michael Toglia, like what they tried to do with Elvis Montero? Does he end up doing that? Xavier Isaac, Tampa Bay Rays, a guy that surprised a lot of us in the draft by going in the first round, but they saw some stuff that we didn't. He's in Single A Charleston right now, 36 games, 232, 401, 389, 4 home runs, 8 extra base hits, 29 walks to 25 strikeouts. Age 19, feels like he needs a little bit of a higher challenge. I'd look for him to get sent to Bowling Green sooner rather than later, go join the Hot Rods, get a chance to get some more advanced pitching because he's walking more than he's striking out, and he's striking out less than once a game. So the last guy, Grant Levine of the Colorado Rockies. I was struggling between Grant Levine and Nico Cavadas of the Boston Red Sox, but Grant Levine, also in AA Hartford, part of the reason you're having to have Hunter Goodman move around, 48 games, 264, 407, 442, 6 home runs, 16 extra base hits, 36 walks to 44 strikeouts in 48 games, and 2-for-4 on stolen bases. Nico Cavadas, like I said, just missed the cut for the Boston Red Sox, and part of that, it's not supposed to be a recency bias thing, but part of that is he's not necessarily having the performance you expected him to have in AA Boston. 43 games, I'm sorry, AA Portland for the Boston Red Sox. 43 games, 230, 406, 453, 9 home runs, 13 extra base hits, 40 walks to 68 strikeouts in 43 games, 1-for-1 on stolen bases. You need the strikeouts to come down a bit. You'd like to see a little bit more power, but again, your power tool is only as good as your hit tool. So when you bring the average up by cutting down the strikeouts, that slugging number is going to come up from 453. That power production is going to come because when he makes contact, he hits it plenty hard. Fantastic week for the show. If you have questions for us for Monday's mailbag, I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. Show's on Twitter at Locked On Farm. You can email us, LockedInMLBProspects@gmail.com, or drop your questions in the LockedInMLBProspects Discord. Links in the episode description, links in the show notes. Until tomorrow's show, remember, it's always a great time to pay a minor leaguer.